Brisbane, Australia. This is episode 135 of The Normal Blokes, a podcast dedicated to improving the competitive 40k experience. I'm Denith, and for the first part of this episode, we are joined by the venerable, the virtuous, the king of kings, Mr. Will Milton. How you doing, mate?
I'm good, mate. Thanks for having me on. How are you?
Oh, good, buddy. It's the Noble Blokes tonight. It's the Night Players.
The Noble Blokes. Let's go, yeah, mate.
So, look, we're back. We're barely recovered from the jet lag. My eyes are closing. It's currently 9 p.m. on a Tuesday, and all I want to do is sleep, but I know I'll wake up in an hour because my body clock's fucked. But yeah, we're here to talk all things Belgium and WTC, mate. So what we plan on doing on the show is interviewing a few players and members of the team. Will and I were lucky enough to be part of the crew going over. Will was our Knights player, and he also had a stellar little soiree on Custodes in singles.
Yeah, it was
so
a good time.
Yeah, it was only what, like 7-1 or
something like that.
Yeah, do you come seventh in singles?
Yeah, I came seventh. Yeah,
that's obnoxious, bro. Yeah, when it's just like an army you picked up like immediately before.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was incredible. And then obviously, Will was a playing member, part of Team Australia, who came third at the second WTC, which we just returned from. So today we'll talk a bit about Will's journey coming from, you know, a newer player. I don't really want to call you a newer player, I've been playing for ages, but like that journey from playing, you know, at the local level and then building his way up to play on things like state teams, which he's done twice, and make the national team. So Will, mate, it's great to have you on. How are you feeling after all the travel?
Mate, I am bloody glad to be here and get to share the experience of Belgium and the honour to play for Australia that it is with, you know, the wider community. Post-Belgium, I'm feeling pretty good. Had to stop over in Israel and checked out Jerusalem for a few days and got to rest up in the good old Holy Land. So that was nice, but glad to be back home and ready to get back onto, you know, other things other than playing 40K for a little bit. Take a little bit of a break, but also keen for, we've got TNAO coming up in 2 weeks. The big 120 player event we've got in Brisbane for 3 days. So keen to judge for that and just check out and see how the local guys are doing since we've been back in Australia.
Yeah, man, I'm very keen for TNAO. And for anyone who's listening who hasn't heard about it, check it out on the Northside Alliance's Facebook page. It's a massive 3-dayer up here in Brisbane. I'm being Will's little armiger and taking his his night list from WTC and seeing how it goes. So I'm very excited to play at that event and play at a big major in Brisbane, which I've never played a 3-day event outside of like CanCon and Uprising, so this will be sick.
Yeah, it'll be awesome, man. First one, so yeah.
That'll be good. But Will, mate, before, I know we've had you on the show before, but talk to us a little bit about your journey on how you started up with 40K, and I guess the path that took you to wanting to play more competitively and play at a high level.
Yeah, 100%. So for those who don't know me, my name is obviously Will Milton. I'm a part of the Northside Alliance, as Denise mentioned. We're at the north side of Brisbane. I started 40K pretty much just before COVID hit. So I started collecting passively with, you know, your friends play it. And you're like, oh, come check out this cool game you know. And they're like, oh, there's like all these miniatures that move. And played Dawn of War as a kid. I was like, okay, I'll check it out. Then, you know, fast forward, joined this awesome little club called the Northside Alliance. We weren't together at the time, but like as an official organization, but just a bunch of dudes hanging out, having fun. Got to hang out, meet Reese. He's the main dude who's the president of TNA and runs that. And I was like, oh, this looks like a lot of fun. And personally, I come from a pretty competitive background in like football. Like I played rugby union at a state level before. I played soccer at a state level and a number of other things. I love competing and stuff. It's just, you know, some people are like that in their nature. And I saw competitive 40K and I was like, oh, I'll give this a blast. It seems like a bit like chess, and like, there's a lot of depth to it in terms of like, the armies and the list building and the painting and also just like the playing it itself, right, and the scoring. So I was lucky enough to start. I at the end of 8th, I think I had maybe one or two games. And then we had COVID hit. So I was hanging out in about Strathpine and good games there. Then I was like, we got to... like, you know, we had lockdown, we had this period of time where no one in the world was playing 40k, so I got to collecting Necrons. I really liked them. That was kind of my first army. Then we had QGC did a test event for 9th. We had 9th edition drop, And everyone was like, oh, this is really cool. It's different. It's a bit more like a linear compared to 8th edition. The scoring system's got primary. It's got secondary. The board's smaller. The codexes are all new. There's no index hammer. And like hop straight in. Like pretty much I had maybe 2-3 games a ninth and then immediately into events. And man, it was a blast. Like just meeting the community and the people around. Like I don't think I meet you straight away, but I met some of the other TMB boys. Like I played Brian at my first event. And I played Geordie pretty quickly. And, you know, Brisbane's got this awesome 40K community in the competitive scene that's very welcoming, very wholesome, and everyone gets along really well. So, yeah, kind of got in there, which whetted the appetite to be like, oh, this is a bit of fun. Like, you know, this competitive thing here. Like, all these boys are actually going pretty hard. They're all really good players. I didn't really know about ATC or about WTC at the time. Like, ETC was the thing at the time, and, like, they were still... It was still a thing, but I was like, okay, I just want to try and pushing, see how much good of a player I could become. Mm. So I hopped on some, you know, different Marines and just stuck with it and went hard. And
the OG
went,
Raven Guard, Will.
The Raven Guard, mate, yes. There's a few of us running him, but Hayden Walduck, the legend, and myself. But, you know, we had Gladiator Gaming come up at the time with McGowan being the state rep for Queensland, and he was running some awesome team events. Got to play these really cool team events. I'm like, this is a blast. I want to see how far I can go with this. I want to see, as a player, what I can push to. You know, kind of get to Uprising in 2022, I believe it was. Yeah, it was 2022. And, you know, this is the first time I'm kind of hearing about, like, the Queensland team, and there's an Australian team. We kind of got to see the boys that went over and won last year. They had team meetings when we were at Uprising 2022. And got the pleasure of staying with you, Denise, and the other boys from TNB down there, and getting onto the team in 2022 for Queensland as a coach. Now, mate, that was a blast.
What a journey, mate.
What a journey, right? Like it was a pretty quick turnaround. Like it wasn't that long that I got to kind of play and get into it, push hard, and like you learn a lot of skills and player development. Like working with Liam, like I played Liam a heap during that period, and just like upskilling the basic, you know, in terms of strategy, in terms of list construction, in terms of understanding the ebbs and flow of a game. Like it's super important, and it's skills you kind of pick up from experience, right?
Yeah.
You know, up until that point, I'd been just playing and focusing on like faction mastery in terms of like jump packs and Marines and like lightning claws and stuff when they were good, like just post Crusher. That was awesome to see that. And then leading into that year of ATC, like that feels like a decade ago, even though it was
properly
only...
does, right? It was like what 14 yeah. months ago?
It's not that long, right? Like it's 18 months or something, right? Yeah. So, you know, here's little Jimmy Will, and I'm like gonna go and jump on the Queensland team with you guys and have a blast down in New South Wales, and Josh McGowan's running guard, and bloody, I'm sure we've told the story before. I remember we viewed this, but that he got flooded in, so I had to jump on the guard last minute, and the worst codex in 9th edition at the time. I'd never played it before. And, you know, you gave me one shooting phase of, or two
well,
shooting
yeah, your
phases.
Your one rep of guard was the night before ATC, like in Newcastle on the dinner table, just doing a shooting phase into my tower.
Yeah, you and Eric were giving me a bit of the mentor of, this is how you shoot guard. This is the profiles. This is how you do your target priority. And, you know, we managed to snag a win as Queensland that year, which was awesome. So from there, I essentially got to realize the skill level and the dedication and the quality of players around Australia. Like, I hadn't really traveled much for 40K at that point yet. Then playing ATC, I got to play awesome people like Craig Sumpton and like some of the other New South Wales boys and, you know, all different states and WA guys and whatnot. And I was like, okay, I really want to put my heart into this. I don't know if I'm good enough to push myself to be an Australian level player, but I really want to have a go. And that next year, I pretty much dedicated, I probably traveled to like, I think it was like 9 or 10 events across Australia and across like everywhere except for Melbourne, except for WA and the Northern Territory. I pretty much went to an event and got to play all the best players across Australia, gain a lot of experience. And at that time, post ATC, we actually went down to VTC, like you and me, Denise, with Wayne and Sam Rubino.
Yes.
And I jumped on the Knights and I'm like, one of the important things about 40K, I think, is faction mastery. Now, some players of notable words will say that faction mastery isn't a thing, but it actually is. It really is. Like, you can have someone whose specialty is in, you know, Eldar, like Simon, or you can have GSC, Tyranids, like Eric, right? Or Liam, that's like Necrons, for example. And it's super important. So one of the things I realized really quickly is there isn't super notable night players around Australia. There's a few good ones, like James Mann and Nick Argent, that are very, very good. But I wanted to try and push that to the next level. And I stuck to my guns and went, okay, I'm going to buy a Knights army. And for that whole year leading up to Uprising this year, which the final selection for Team Australia has made, I played Imperial Knights pretty much solely for a whole year. Had the pleasure of getting to play people like Matt Morisoli and Jeremy Martino and Dean Sinbeck, all these long players that have been playing around Australia for a long time. And also members of Team Australia, whether it be coaches or players themselves, and kind of got to test my mettle. And I think that's an important factor that people need to factor in, is you need to be level-headed. You need to go hard, but you also need to build friendships and build relationships with people. And over that time, gaining experience more so than just trying to just base things off math or base things off how you think it's going to go. You get to a point where you can just rely on your natural ability, or not necessarily natural ability, but your experience, your natural understanding of how something goes within a game to make it function. You don't have to test every little thing. I'm sure you felt that, Denise.
Yeah, I was going to say, man, like, I'm really happy we got to talk about this, because a lot of players that have played at this high level, they've been kind of grinding for years and years, and awesome, you know, props to them. They've been working really hard. But you're an example of someone that's kind of made that decision to go really hard. You've put the work in, you've put the time in. You've, you know, connected with the players that can help you and make you better. You've traveled to events, and, you know, the proof is in the pudding that, you know, you got the results you wanted, and that's awesome to see. And it does also show that, you know, for people who want to commit and go hard and do well, the opportunities are there. The opportunities are there to, you know, play for your nation. And it's something that I remember talking with Eric about, and he said last year in the lead up, like, man, how many people get to say that they, you know, represented their country in something. That's amazing, right?
It's a pretty big thing, right? It's a massive honor.
Yeah, it's huge. Like barely anyone gets to say that. So, you know, if it's something you want to do, anyone listening in, and you want to put the time and effort in, go for gold. You know, it's very achievable if you, you know, are doing all the right things and push hard. So that's sick, man. And, you know, after the selections, you were kind of focusing pretty hard on Knights for teams, among a couple other things, but you were pretty locked in quite early, hey?
Yeah, look, talking about the actual team selection itself, you know, we had some really cool guys on the team. Like, you've got staples like Liam, Eric, an amazing dude. He's not on the team this year, but like, you know, he helped and mentored Alex and I all through WTC, helped us get prepped and get we had, like, so Liam on the Necrons. We had Jeremy Martino, who's playing CSM, not his main faction, but normally he's on Sisters, but a bit of a different change. And mate, he killed it. Suitability was awesome. Soul lost on what he was for a little bit, but he landed on these pesky Chaos Knights. He loves giving Knights players shit, by the way. But now he is the best player in Team Oz in terms of Knights. I will give him that. I'll concede that title. he definitely outperformed me. We had Bro Middleton jump on the list style to what Eric runs, so very horde heavy and, you know, perform quite well. We had Macca, or Josh McMillan, running the T-Suns without Magnus, which was a shock to most of the world, according to a lot of podcasts, which is pretty funny to hear. Smashed it. And then we Australian Frenchman, the Wee Yet himself, Alex Terrison. What a legend. He was running GSC, and He absolutely did awesome. I think he won nearly all of his games. And to top it off, Chris Wright, like, you know, the Terminator himself, running Eldar, the Eldar Master, like, he smashed out of the park. So the team composition pretty early was obviously GSC, and really early on when it dropped, we were like, Imperial Knights looking really good. The terrain was really in a way that was helping Knights. Even with the nerfs and whatnot like that, the data that we were getting was proving that, like, the Imperial Knights were performing pretty well across the board into most things. The one thing we probably, like, personally I would have loved to have looked at more, the Super Ruins, for the coin term, the WTC table layouts, if anybody has had a chance to look at them, have these ruins, which are essentially a small L and a big L, or sometimes two big L's or two small L's, attached together at 90 degrees. So they become nearly like 24 inches long in terms of, it's quite hard for Knights to walk around them. And it's something I didn't play on a heap, so which kind of hurt us in pairings, which we'll get to. yeah, like overall, man, the Knights are feeling really good. We did consider taking Custodes, and as I'm sure people ask about that. But we felt at the time the lists we were playing into Custodes, the Custodes just weren't winning well enough, or they were kind of just getting like high scoring losses, like eights and nines.
They felt so like a sandbag singles army, right?
Yeah, yeah. We felt it was similar to like the Deathwing Knights, man. And yeah, like it was good, but I think none of us had taken a thorough enough look at it initially, probably. Like Liam played it for a little bit and Liam was doing pretty well with it, but we were just finding like, oh, but this beats it, but that beats it. But if, not, for example, Pyrian Lights get a good decent table into it, it beats it as well. So yeah, like that's kind of how we landed our team makeup. So like they kind of fell in from essentially getting the core factions. Liam on the Necrons. We like, you know, we heard that it was going to be a Drawhammer list apparently, but no, Liam absolutely killed it. Like he got a lot of 20s, right? So yeah. The Necrons were a absolute weapon in our arsenal for WTC.
Yeah, he got a grand total of 14 draws, right? Over 7 games. Yeah, 14
something
draws.
Like that. Yeah. Something like that. Points equivalents. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, but yeah, I mean, I think on that topic of Custodes, mate, because you decided to take Custodes in singles while I was happily playing your knights, being really, really chuffed that I didn't have to take an army to Belgium. I just picked up your knight army. But yeah, how did you feel the Custodes went? Because you obviously did very well coming seventh. How did they feel in your hands on that terrain?
Yeah, look, so WTC had a few adjustments on the terrain over the iterations. Like, there was only one public release, but I think we had two or three versions come through for the team players. The initial terrain felt a little bit open for them, but we kind of, like, we had a conversation about, do you want to play Stodes? Do we want the Knights instead? Like, I remember we were sitting there before this sub at Newcastle, and a few of us had this conversation, and picking them up, like, I had maybe one, like, small half game with them before lists up, and they were fine, but we had Sam Lemon, the legend himself. He was playing Stodes into me a lot, and we were finding they were just not performing as well as what we thought they would, so we decided to drop, like, to not take them and stick with the Knights. Now, actually getting two singles and being at War Masters, man, the Stodes were an absolute powerhouse, I do have to say that. Like, and clearly by the team results as well, like, look at, like, John Lennon, for example, absolutely smashing out of the park with Stodes. Stodes were a staple that, look, I think we probably should have taken on Australia, but, you know, that's not a bad thing. That, like, you know, we still did very, very well with the lists we took and the way our construction worked, but I would have loved to have seen Stodes in our lineup retrospectively, but you can only go off the data you have at the time. And, yeah, so going through the table was, like, the large Ls and the big bases allows for the massive Stode bricks, or, like, the 9, the 10-man units with a character attached to just push through without really getting threatened by any shooting that isn't a Wraith Knight.
Yeah.
So for those who don't know, the top 3 players in War Masters were all Wraith Knight lists. They were very deadly over the weekend. I actually had the pleasure of playing Thomas Wobeck, the guy who won the War Masters, and we actually drew. So I got a 10-10 with him on a very hard mission. Managed to get some sneaky Custodes in these back line and punt the Incarn out with some Alaris and hold it down. So if that says anything, it says that Stodes actually can hang with the bigger armies like GSC, like Eldar, even CSM. Like, it can be a bit harder in a CSM because the Forge Fiends are so deadly. But yeah, I think Stodes are a key component of both teams and singles for most teams.
Yeah, and you know, it was crazy to see, like, John Lennon's list that you mentioned earlier. That list was one we looked at a fair bit in practice and worked against because it was very, very good. It was very tidy. How did you find, because you had some different stuff in your singles list. You had some Alaris, right?
Yes.
Yeah, how did you find them?
Yeah, so just quickly through my singles list.
Oh, rattle through it, yeah.
Yeah, 2 big 9-mound blobs with 7 spears, 2 shields. One of them had a banner. Then I had a character with a Ceaseless Hunter, a shield captain with Ceaseless Hunter. Really, really good. Amazing ability. It's like Phantasm, but once per game, so probably how it should be. And getting full back in charge, which is also really good in Stodes. Then I had Trajan. I had an Alaris captain, which fights on death and gives you the free strat as well. And a blade champ. Then I had 1 unit of Lyris, 5-man, and then a 4-man guard unit as well, with a Calidus and Exactions in there. So the list was pretty light on units, but the main thing I really loved about it was the ability for to double Rapid Ingress. So a lot of the times I would Rapid Ingress Trajan's Blob and the Alaris Blob at the same time. Because of the points of not taking a 10-man and only taking a 9-man, you would fall under that 50% army mark and you could double Rapid Ingress.
Amazing.
And then the Alaris have the ability to go back into the sky in at the end of your opponent's turn and come back down again. So you essentially get to bounce them around on board. And for a unit like the Alaris, which their weakness is movement because they only move 5 inches and their shooting is that good, getting four reels to wound against vehicles, monsters, and character units, which is a lot of stuff.
The character's pretty massive, right?
Yeah, like, what isn't taking the character that's a good unit, right? So, I dropped them on the Incarn, and they killed the Incarn in shooting and combat by themselves. Oh, wow. And through Fortune and obviously the half damage. So, they're pretty good, man. Like, I respect them. I think a lot of people look at Stows and they kind of see it in two ways. And to be fair, they probably should. Is you have like the stat check nature of them, which is the I'm got 3 wounds and a 4-up invuln and I can get -1 damage in 2 spots. It's pretty tough, right? Like that's pretty durable. But the biggest component to me is like, what happens if you just treat it a bit more like a traditional like melee army? Like you don't push as hard as you should, or you, like, you kind of just stage a little bit better. Like, you just threaten objectives and you force the trades, initiate that. And that can be hard, but if you can do that, if you can threaten positioning, especially where they can't shoot you, it becomes very, very powerful.
Yeah, well, that's a really cool point, right? Like, if you give them your whole army, you're kind of just saying, hey, you've got 5 turns to manage this. But if you chill and wait, it's like, hey, you have maybe 1 turn to kill 30 custodes. You're fucked.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the biggest thing, man, is you don't you can't feed them little bits over time. You either have to position in, or at like turn 3-ish, you generally have to drop everything on them.
Yeah, true.
Now, you are leaning to the stat check nature when you do that, right? But like, that's okay. Like, I got to play, I think it was Switzerland's Knight player on round 3. And he, you know, top bloke, I had a really lovely game with him. But he actually had knights that were, so he had the Atropos, he had Kenneth Rex, and a Crusader. So he actually had the ability to kill my army. Now I waited till turn 2, double Rapid Ingress, push, and I'm like, okay, normally I don't push everything out at once. I'll give you like a small unit, but I put absolutely everything out. Managed to pick up, I did like 30 damage in shooting between all the custodes to double shoot and the reroll wounds. It's pretty wild, but it's not crazy based on the math when you look at it. Then managed to pick up an Atropos, a Crusader, and two Warglaives in the same turn. So, you know, Custode's damage isn't the problem. Custodes are very, very powerful. They hit very hard, but it's your player's ability to understand the positioning and like the threat of them. The threat projection is big. One of the key components we all realize very quickly, especially seeing Lennon's list, is the double blade champ is very powerful, but you generally can't have Trajan if you do that.
Yeah.
Because the points get a bit hairy and where you put units and models and whatnot.
Yeah, that's interesting, because the double blade champ gives you so much threat projection, right? But there are some things there, like Trajan's abilities straight up are just fucked when you attach him to a unit. Like, so good just to ignore all that stuff. So, like, sometimes that just turns matchups on their head, right? Like, you go into something like a Wraith Knight, you just kill it, right?
Yep, 100%. Like, yeah. Round 2, I played into LLR, I managed to get a 20 into it, because the player that I also played was from France, lovely dude. He pushed his Wraith Knight up a little bit too far. I managed to make like a decent charge with Trajan and like 5 custodes remaining. You know, just pop the plus on a wound with Slayer Nightmares, pop the extra attack for having the unit mostly dead. And you pop Trajan's 12 attacks and he's strength 10, plus one a wound, -2, 3 damage. And they can't modify the damage and you ignore the -1 of Fortune. And it actually just does pick up a Wraith Knight at that point and it does just punch through stuff. So, he's important for the mirror, and he's important for that. And the Calidus as well for the Vect. Just dealing with Phantasm and like the double drop on GSC or the 3-inch drop on GSC, for example.
That's big. Yeah.
Yeah.
Shit, man. Yeah, and you know, I think we need to pivot and talk about your team's list, which was, you know, a badass knights list. But yeah, it's great to see that you can you know, just focus on Knights for the better part of, what, a year plus, and then just pivot straight to Custodes and do well. That's badass, yeah.
Yeah, look, to finish on the Custodes, man, I do have to say I'm pretty happy, and I'm very honoured to get to play them and be the highest-ranked Australian in War Masters. Like, that's pretty cool, but I had half a practice game into Jeremy Martino on John Lennon's list. I didn't get to play in my list at all. I actually made my list, like, 30, 40 minutes before list sub because I wasn't sure what I was going to play. So, you know, it seems to be that when you get to a point with your player skill, you can kind of transition and play most people, which is and play most armies, which is really good to see.
The best bit was when we were discussing your teams list and your singles list. I was like, hey, Will, what do you have in your teams list that's not Knights? And you're like, oh, two exaction squads and an assassin. And I was like, cool. What about your singles list? And you're like, oh, one exaction squad and a Calidus. I was like, so I can use the other exaction squad for the singles, so I don't need to bring anything. Yep, okay, sick. So I didn't play with any of my models. It was great.
Yeah, it was awesome, man. You had to go party afterwards with no army.
Yeah, I had to take home a single Helverin, and it made it, bro. It made it home.
Yeah, let's go. Very good.
But yeah, dude, I mean, your Knights list straight off the bat was pretty cool. I'm playing it next weekend at TNAO, so you've got... You got the Crusader with Mysterious Guardians, aka Homer Simpson going back into the shrubs. You got the Warden with double bond.
Yep.
Two pairs of bonds undies, yep. And then you got six Warglaives, what, two exaction squads and an Eversaw, yeah?
Yeah, that's correct. That's the one.
I remember after Newcastle, it was at the airport when you and Eric were talking about the Assassin pick. Tell me a bit about that, because I know a lot of people will understand kind of the two and six Knights will have a certain way they play and things like that. Tell us a bit about the Eversaw and what role that filled.
Yeah, man. So a lot of people were like, sorry. So essentially, when you go two and six, you can either go an extra knight, so you can go to seven, which is what you ran at Newcastle and what you ran in singles with the Helverin, or you can go to, let's take a Calidus, or you can go, let's take two exaction squads and Eversaw, or some assortment of random garbage scoring bullshit you can put in the end, right? Now, the Calidus is really, really, really good for the Vect. However, what I was finding a lot of the games is the Vect didn't matter enough into Knights because a lot of the strats that I'm using, anti-vehicle, and a lot of the strats people are using to kill me are either already 2CP or they have ways to mitigate the cost of them, whether it be like get a strat for free, a T-Suns from a captain, from a shield captain, right? So it wasn't actually impacting the game enough. And the other thing I found is the Eversaw was, like, I think it's 75 points off the top of my head. I could be wrong, but it's actually quite cheap, and it hits like a truck. So the Eversaw itself has the ability to... So pre-game moves 9, it moves 9, but also in your command fades, you can pick between going advance and charge, which is awesome, or sustained 3 in shooting and combat, or precision. Now, you can already pay the CP for precision, so you don't need to really worry about that. So... Or it's precision in combat with Epic Challenge, Heroic Challenge, or whatever it's called. And one of my favorite things to do was I would put the Eversaw actually down first, like in the center of the board, in a way that I can pregame move it into safety to hold an objective or to do a secondary like area denial or something like that, right? But I would threaten that. And nearly every single one of my opponents, in fact, I think nearly all of them except for like Liam VSL on the T-Suns because he doesn't care for Magnus, was, okay, oh crap, if I lose my Warlord really early... Like if it's a Farseer or it's like Ortok Wayleaper or whatnot, I to the Eversaw because the Eversaw moves 9, advances, pregame moves 9, and then you know charges 12. So it's like a 36-inch threat range or something like that off the top of my head. Yeah. Like people actually have to respect it because you pick the sustained 3s and you can use the grenade strat for 1CP as well. So you could potentially sneakily just like punch off a Warlord really early. It didn't really happen because everyone was aware of it, but it was more the threat of it and forcing people to play slightly more passively than they'd want to, and then giving me a bit more central ball control against the screening units, essentially.
Yeah, and how good is it just having something that's that cheap, that's not an armature, that can actually haul ass, that can actually defend itself? That's cool.
Yeah, like the lone op ability and the ability to just like hold an objective in the open. Like we all know how good lone ops are, right? But in a Knight's army especially, very solid. And the Calidus and the other assassins are good for that, but this guy is quite a bit cheaper than the rest of them. Yeah. So getting that combined with the two exaction squads rather than just one means that all of a sudden the game into GSC means, oh, I can actually screen. The game into Eldar means, oh, I can actually put a model out here, like a unit out here to get some points for secondary rather than just giving a whole armature away.
Yeah.
The game becomes a little bit more playable, which is the best part. Like, one of the most important parts of the game that happened in France was Abaddon, I played the CS Immigrant.
This is huge, yeah.
Yeah, this is awesome. You guys will love this. So, I was on the back foot because I was playing on Super Ruins. Abaddon made a 10-inch charge into the Warden, and the Warden and the Crusader were beside each other. Now, long story short, there was a bit of judge calls because of the movement and the problems getting through buildings and whatnot, but it worked out. And my opponent managed to get his Terminators, wrap them off the Warden, and Abaddon by himself into the Crusader. The dude spent like 20 minutes doing this and played excellently to do so. He managed to get past my screen because he made such a long charge. I then proceeded to 2CP, heroic intervene, the bloody exaction squad, and Abaddon doesn't get to hit either of the knights.
Oh,
and then I'm like,
God.
Okay, cool. You just get to wipe out the exaction squad. And that's kind of one of the reasons it's important. Now, kind of going on from this story is we realized very quickly that Abaddon actually doesn't fit underneath the buildings on W2C. His points on his little chaos star are actually too tall. So the judges, they come over and rectify the situation and said, you only kill the Warden, Abaddon has to charge the Wardens, and the exaction squad die by a Terminator charging them. We realized about two rounds earlier as a team that you can use Fight on Death for the Night Strat, and you can use Epic Challenge or Rogue Challenge, I always get it wrong, to fight on death and target a character like Abaddon. We exactly talked about this, and I'm like, you know what? I'm going to spend
it. It was literally the round before, right? Was it the Belgium
Portugal.
Round that we talked about this? Or Portugal?
It was Portugal. Okay. It was the round before, because I did it to Trajan, because I was like, okay, let's just see if we can do it, and the judges said we could. So the French player is like he's kind of clenching. You can see him clenching his butt a bit. Like, I don't blame him. You go, here's like all these attacks. So you don't go the big attacks on Abaddon because he's 9 wounds, and the Warden's Fist is strength 20, neg 3, 8 damage. So that you kind of need, the damage isn't great when you need 4 attacks. So I got 8 attacks hitting on 4s. I managed to get 7 hits with a reroll 1, which is pretty good. Like, that's definitely high. Then I managed to get 7 wounds. And old mate fails, like, I think 4 of them. And man, his face, because you do the slow roll, he's like, oh, I'll CP reroll. Like, slow roll, CP reroll. And the last one he fails, he, like, starts screaming in French. And it was like, I was like, oh, relief. I killed the Warlord in his turn, so I get honored in my next turn. I have the 5, feel no pain. But, man, he was getting pretty worried. So, for those who need to look out for that, don't forget about the fight on death and the, the targeted character with precision in combat. It is a thing and can be stacked.
Yeah, that's intense. That's intense. And, yeah, like, that's so cool with the Eversaur, right? Like, I remember you said the Netherlands game. I think maybe the Netherlands game or the Scotland game. The Eversaur went really hard. What was the biggest kill he got?
Yeah, so the Eversaur doing his little assassin stuff. So the greatest thing he did was versus Scotland. I think I played Matt from Team Scotland, absolute legend. Like, he was on Necrons.
Yeah.
Managed to I snuck him into a Lich Guard blob, and I popped the triple sustain and just one of those spike rolls. I think I rolled 5 sixes or something. I got 20
Holy
hits.
Shit.
And the Eversaur is anti-infantry 3+, and this is into Lich Guard. So, and it's AP2, 3 damage. Sorry, 2 damage. So, he killed like 4 or 5 Lich Guard by himself and just like pretty much crumpled an entire Lich Guard flank by himself. It was amazing. I was like, hell yeah, what this thing's pretty good.
Yeah.
So, I had a few questions from Team New Zealand and other places about why'd you take the Eversaur. And to be honest, it was just, it's a cheaper option that does a similar role to the Calidus that people still have to respect.
Yeah. Well, I always, like, with my limited, 10 games on this army now, I found that charging an armager into stuff that I didn't want to put it into felt bad. Like, sure, charging a couple armagers into a Rhino or, like, a Wave Serpent feels awesome because you could tear open a tank. But, like, charging an armager into, like, infiltrators, I'm like, ugh. This sucks. I don't want to be here. Like, I want to be somewhere else shooting Melter and, like, in someone's backfield, and I want to be on a corner charging infiltrators. So, like, something cool like the Eversaur just fills that role. That's really, really cool.
Yeah, it's just the trade value. You don't have to commit a high-value resource. You can commit a... Like, it's still a good resource, right? But you can commit something like that, and if it lives and it manages to just sneak an objective, it means they have to deal with it and come close.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's fucking sick. And look, I just wanted to talk quickly on some of your more challenging games in teams, because there were 2 rounds. I think it was the first and the last round that you called Eldar, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, so game one, played New Zealand against their great captain. She was playing Eldar with the Wraith Knight and the double Wraith Guard.
Mm-hmm.
And I got 4 points against it. So, sometimes you just got to buckle down, boys. And when you get to teams, one of the important things is, and any good teams player should know this, or any up-and-comer, is sometimes you just got to jump on the sword for your team. You just got to take the loss, and you got to get as many points as you can out of it. Now, if you can hold in there, And especially if you can subvert your opponent's expectations, like just the way, if you don't respond like, oh no, everything's the end of the world, and you just look for ways to try and screw their plan up and try and get points on your end.
You can properly rattle the cage, right?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. And now, especially in the first game against New Zealand, I nearly managed to get like a 10 out of that. Had some stuff flip back into the Eldar player's hands, but you know, that's just a part of the game at the end of the day, a part of dice. But if people can pull that off, people make mistakes. They start to get rattled. They start to freak out a little bit. And if you can just hold your composure and then even just push a little bit and you kill something, you might, like I managed to kill the Wraith Knight on turn two and then kill most of a Wraithgar brick.
When I saw that coming off the table, I was like, Will, I love you.
Yeah, and look, then you just got to push your advantage. And, you know, luckily the rest of our team was from both into Sweden and, was it Sweden? Sorry, Netherlands. Into Netherlands and into NZ. Taking those out of the pool meant we just paired so much better for the rest of the team. But, you know, if you can keep that composure and, like, against the Netherlands, it didn't really work. Like, I just, you know, the Wraith Knight killed an Armiger in Overwatch without guide. Just a few things like that happen, and it's like, okay, well, I can't get points. I'll go for the Gambit. And, you know, good zero, like, it happens. Like, you're playing in a meta that isn't the most stable. So, but overall, it's, you know, how many points can you get out for your team? How can you best match to make sure you get the most greens, and obviously Jeremy and Soli are probably the best people to talk about that, because or Eric, they're all masters of pairing. So yeah.
Well, yeah, I was just going to add to that. In our final round against Netherlands, you were one of the first pairings to come out, and you had Rude, the captain, who's an absolute legend, by the way. But
yeah, he's a legend.
Your guy's game looks so fun.
Yeah,
you was just large from him laughing. You're like, yeah, he killed like five warp spiders and hawks. Fuck you. It was so funny, man. But
Crusader shot and killed like two Eldar bodies.
And yeah, and he's like, fuck you, Crusader, from across the table. But yeah, like that game, the fact that I just remember Jeremy after it was paired, he came up to you going, "Hey, Will, like you've taken this out, everything else is going to go really well, you know, but just knuckle down and take this out." And man, just see, that round was when everything kind of clicked. And like, sure, that was, you know, a horrific game for the Knights, and you know, there was, when I kind of saw the board state and you weren't looking too happy, I was like, oh look, it's going down, just do what you can. But then every other game just spiked up, so it was just like, You were literally the shield. You were the Hodor, bro, just holding everything back.
Hodor.
Yeah. So that was awesome. And we got like a 100+ win into the Netherlands, which is
101.
Yeah, man. And they're a good team. They're a very good
team.
They
did really well. Yeah.
Yeah, they're a bunch of good guys. And you know, so that just shows how, you know, some games and some rounds you're going to be able to slap hard and go really hard, and other times, you know, you have to take the bad games. But yeah, man, I know we talked a bit before we started recording about, I guess in hindsight, the Knights pick was bold. It was quite brave. You want to expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, 100%, man. So as I was saying at the start of kind of the interview, like we picked the Knights early based on my experience with the Knights and how it was performing. We probably, like, seeing the wider meta, it came out, it became apparent that the Knights actually looked okay into the top teams like England, Poland, and USA, but in the middle of the pack, there's a lot of not necessarily anti-knights, but anti-big stuff armies. And it was actually looking pretty hairy for Soli and myself in terms of potential pairing through there. And that kind of did come to fruition. Like, we saw that versus Belgium, we saw that versus France, where we had a few other games that, like, didn't go the way we expected them based on, you know, numerous different factors. But it factored in, and like the Knights still performed, but probably not to perform to expectations for me as a player personally, but also as a team expectation. Previously in 9th edition, they had the ability to be able to hold out pretty well with, you know, you used to be able to stack out some amazing buffs. You can't do that anymore. They're pretty much just a 4-up invuln on a tough body with lots of wounds, right? Which meant that, you know, if you get things going wrong, it's hard to recover, harder than what we expected. So they did well, but I think if we got to have our time again, get a bit more data, we probably would take the Stodes or something else potentially. The problem that comes with that though, right, is other countries were looking at Stodes and looking at Terminators and looking at like just CSM and everything. It was like, we're gonna bring Guard, we're gonna bring like Death Watch. We're going to bring all this stuff that's actually good at killing Terminator-esque bodies. So
well, that pairings into exactly those things like Guard and Death Watch, we almost didn't care, right?
Yeah, like we didn't care because we had the Knights. That's the thing. But we would have cared if we had Stones. But, you know, it's respective. It's retrospective. It's hard to know. But Australia still absolutely crushed it. We still ended up third. The boys rallied really, really well. Like, you know, after a draw into Belgium and a loss into France, Liam absolutely led from the front and killed it. We had an awesome backswing of like nearly 100 points plus in every game. I think we were shy in like one of the games versus Scotland, right? Versus the rounds versus Scotland. But man, like Australia still killed it. And we proved that for the third time in a row. So ETC, one, we came fourth. We won last year. We came third this year. I am very proud of our team, how much dedication we put in, how much time we put in, all the players and all the coaching staff. You guys absolutely killed it with support. Like, thanks. It was an absolute honor to be a part of it and to get to play for Australia. And, you know, for anyone that's listening, that would love to one day represent Australia in 40K. I just, you know, get your grind in, go hard, make some good relationships, have some good friends. You know, just reach out to people. Like, reach out to TNB, reach out to TNA, reach out to any of us guys. Like, we're generally pretty welcoming, pretty friendly. And if you want to push for that, you know, put your best foot forward, put your best attitude and your behavior, the very growth mindset. Not don't worry about your performance as much as your growth and your understanding of where you're going and whatnot. That's the most important. At the end of the day, we're all there to have fun.
Mate, I need to put some motivational music behind that and just re-record it and put it out as a reel. That was beautiful.
maybe one day.
Yeah. But look, yeah, 100%. And I think the thing that makes, you know, our team and our country and some of the other top nations really good is we're not just a bunch of singles players that meet for a month every year to play WTC. Like, we really care about it. We work together a lot, even, you know, for the rest of the year, to build those same skills that we can bring to WTC. And it's really one of our strengths. Like, some of the other countries like Poland do it really well too. So, you know, and big props to them for winning the event. I know we didn't even talk about it at all, but yeah, Poland, their team, you know, they had an awesome lineup, really deserved to win. And I just have this memory in my head of, you know, Typhus at the podium, just tears in eyes, just so happy that his country won, man. It was beautiful. And look, mate, I just want to say a big thank you for number one, your hard work representing our country, and number two, coming on and talking and telling everyone your experiences and how it all went. So look, we actually recorded a bit more than we'd expected, so I might put this out as a standalone, which is perfect. Okay. And then we've got a few more interviews coming up as the weeks progress, but to everyone listening, thank you so much. Will, do you want to shout out anything before we finish?
Yeah, look, I just want to say, look, thank you to everyone around Australia that I've had the honour of, you know, playing in the last year or so, 2 years of trying to get here. It's been a blast and, you know, awesome to represent Australia. And for those that are listening, you know, thank you for supporting TNB and the Australian team so heavily. We raised a heap of money. I think it was like 30 grand roughly, Denise.
So combined with a raffle and major sponsors, like, I just want to put it into perspective, guys. Like, with the raffles and major sponsors, we essentially got our flights for free. Like, we got so much support from you guys. Like, it makes such a difference. And, you know, a lot of the... I think we talked about this in a bit of depth when we were overseas. Like, a lot of the guys on the team can kind of pay their own way and make it happen. But, like, if there's a situation in the future where we have, like, a rising star player who, like, can't afford this trip, you know, the sponsorship that we had this year is a means to get someone like that overseas and representing their country, and that's beautiful. So look, on that topic, massive shout out to our big sponsors, massive shout out to Ben Warrior, who facilitated the raffle and got that going. That was huge. So big props to them.
And look, I guess the closing note is, it's been an absolute honor to represent Australia. Thank you for all the support, and I hope personally to be back there next year, and I hope Australia brings back a even stronger team next year. The fact we had four new guys come across that haven't played at WTC before and we still came third shows the depth of the pool of players in Australia, and I hope that just grows and that expands, and, you know, we can just push harder and harder and prove again and again that Australia deserves to be at a top level competitive 40K in singles, in teams, and everything. And, you know, we have an awesome community, and just proud to represent it.
Yeah, man. Let's go triple podium. Let's do it. So
let's do it.
Yeah. But look, thank you everyone for listening. If you liked what you heard, give us a like on Facebook, subscribe to us on iTunes, and, you know, leaving reviews helps new listeners find us. if you're in Brisbane in Queensland, or if you're traveling up for TNO, we'll see you next weekend, and we'll have a blast. And I'm really happy to just have a 4-day week and have some beers on the Friday and Saturday playing nights, and it's going to be fun. But yeah, Will, thank you again. Take it easy, everyone. See you next time.